104.
Can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, how would you like to be Kevin McCarthy today?
I don't want to be Kevin McCarthy.
So he did what had to be done. And he, you know, remember when we talked about it took 15 tries for him to get the position?
Yeah.
And he was able to, and he just gave up everything because he wanted the position. And now he stands to lose the position, Sandy, because believe he did the right thing, right? I mean, he did the right thing.
Well, you know, he did. They put themselves in their own corner. He did the only thing they really could do, because obviously, taking it beyond the brink was going to be doing the wrong thing, and it would have come back to haunt him politically, doing the wrong thing. So these people put themselves into this fraught position, makes good political theater, but now it's not. There's no win, you know. If they took a responsible position and said, you know, this is not the place for this negotiation, they could have an open negotiation about the budget bill, about a whole bunch of things,
but you,
not about this.
Well, you know, Sandy, when you, as you stated, put yourself in that way, in that kind of position, there is no way. You kind of backed yourself into a corner before. I mean, there are budget negotiations that are going to be had, Sandy. This is not the budget negotiations. They've automatically put themselves in a tough situation, haven't they?
Absolutely. The budget is the place where it should be done, and the budget is the place where you can end up being frozen into the prior budget because you don't have a new budget approved. But it's not fiscally or financially irresponsible. It's just that's a matter of a conflict and a clash of outlooks in public policy, but it's the right place to do it. This is the wrong place to do it, and the people who do this back themselves between a rock and a hard spot. So yeah, Kevin McCarthy is probably no win because he's created a situation for the backbenchers, the people who want to take positions regardless of the responsibility associated with that position. And the way he got his job was to give up any security to the job. So any small group of people in his caucus can create a requirement that there be a new election of a speaker.
And Sandy, I'm pretty sure that's going to happen. And you know, as bad as he wanted the position, and he got it, what's the old axiom? Never... Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. So he got that. And it's probably going to cost him his position. And the problem with that again is, Sandy, we you know, who can possibly come after McCarthy that they can put up? Number one, who will be willing to even take the position? Knowing how precarious it is, Sandy, and whoever that person is, it's probably going to be even more difficult to deal with than McCarthy was.
I suspect. I mean, I have trouble sifting through the personalities in that caucus to figure out Jim Jordan or who it is that would sweep forward to.
Can you imagine Jim Jordan?
Unfortunately, I can't imagine it, and it's not pretty. But you know what we just need responsibility, and to his credit, McCarthy ended up doing the right thing. But like I said, they put themselves into a box, because it is a box. This whole brinksmanship over something which is an absolute necessity. There are other ways to get at fiscal responsibility, but it isn't to argue with your creditors about whether you're going to pay your bills or not.
So Sandy, let me drag you into this one. J.P. Morgan downgrades Target stock amid backlash over LGBT merchandise. Does that make any sense at all to you? Does it make any sense, well, Sandy, that people have forced the downgrade of Target stock over something as silly as this?
Well, the whole, it's a preoccupation, it's a fascination, it's an obsession that the American public has developed. And I would accuse the politicians of creating the obsession, which is to talk about something which is a very small fraction of the American public. And you know, Tom points this out, that, you know, 75 years ago, the Nazis took on the smallest minorities and ostracized them, and it became a way to flex their muscle, and they took on larger and larger groups. And so what in the world, why would Republicans and why would the evangelicals decide to focus so much attention on this very small group? And by focusing the attention on it, it's prompted those who feel like they need to support the downtrodden and the people who are marginalized. It's forced them to come out and defend them. So it's become this big topic of conversation amongst a very small group. And I scratch my head. It's like you said, it feels crazy. I mean, if we were just a tolerant people, we would tolerate all sorts of behavior without bringing it to the fore, debating it. You know, whether people men wear women's clothing or not is something that I personally don't care about if it's their preference. You know, I think Eddie Izzard's a great comedian. He fits into this new group.
Apparently. You know, Sandy, the fact that it's taken on this structure, that J.P. Morgan downgrades the stock of a company like Target that has been, you know, and that people are going to lose a lot of money over something as insane as this, right? I mean, this shows the magnitude of how far this thing has gone, Sandy.
Yes. The fact that corporate, well, Nike's sort of having the same problem with some issues associated with their advertising, and a number of other companies are as well. Apparently, this is the way we impose our censorship. It's not from the government; it's from social peer pressure, and you know, it's these same people who cry out about woke and being indoctrinated, and yet what they're doing now is trying to indoctrinate people in a different direction, you know, in a negative direction about this whole social phenomenon. You know, it's whose ox is being gored when people worried about being indoctrinated. It's like, okay, who's doing the indoctrinating? Because if it's not me, I don't like it. If it's me doing it, it's just fine.
But Sandy, the fact that such a large swath of people have jumped on the bandwagon that they can try to bring to their knees major corporations in this country is, I think, what's at the root of this, Sandy, and why it's so telling, because who's going to be next? What corporation are they going to go after next and demand that the corporations do what they want them to do? You know, I that's the part of it, Sandy,
market boycotting is part of the free market process. So I don't have a problem with it, other than the fact that the nature of the boycott is what the problem is. I mean, why would people decide that this is a fundamental issue that requires there be this broad market action? But it's what's happened. You know, the right has decided that they're going to bring bring it down on companies that seem to be in some fashion championing the cause of various minority groups.
Yeah, yeah, it is more than puzzling to me, Sandy, but it's not going anywhere. I think it's getting worse. And so how do you begin once you get it started? Well, we're going to crush Bud Light. Okay, well, why are you crushing Bud Light? Well, they're not doing what we tell them to do. Well, you know, let's say I'm a guy who drinks Bud Light. I like Bud Light. And so I'm going to shut down Bud Light because they had a gay or they had a transsexual or a transgender person on television. Okay, is that reason enough, Sandy? Does that make any sense whatsoever that I'm willing to sacrifice?
There was a time when in the advertising industry was extremely reluctant to run any ads that were biracial. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Because there was the same potential impact with biracial advertising. I mean, this represents a non-governmental interference in the marketplace that's perfectly permissible, but people ought to ask themselves, why are we doing this? And the people who are doing it ought to be somehow held accountable, and they ought to understand the bad impulse that is behind it, which is lack of tolerance. Why do they care? People ought to ask themselves that. Why do I care?
Got to go to a break. Tom, hang on. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
The fun we used to share, looking through the memories in my mind. Since I've laughed and cried and thought it over, now I realize that it's never over, only set aside.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. Sandy Williams is my guest. You know, Sandy, before we go to the phone lines, here is an article in this morning's National Review. The spectacular corporate hypocrisy on gay rights. On the menu today, you will be amazed at how many big U.S. and multinational corporations who are enthusiastically celebrating Pride Month has significant operations in countries that criminalize homosexuality. It's not just China and Saudi Arabia. It's not just manufacturing in countries such as Pakistan or Indonesia. No, you're going to be flabbergasted by which particularly controversial company at this moment has operations running in Uganda, which just enacted what are probably the most anti-gay criminal laws on the planet. Corporate America gets to market to LGBTQ customers statewide and then turns around and makes a bundle in some of the most anti-gay countries in the world. My point is, Sandy, and apparently everyone is just fine with this systemic hypocrisy. You know, it's articles like that, Sandy, that, you know, kind of plant the seed in people's minds that lead to all of these issues we're talking about, you know, and then people say, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's Gay Pride Month. Why is there a Gay Pride Month? Those people don't deserve to have a Gay Pride Month. And it's those people kind of thing, Sandy, that we're talking about.
Well, we won't really have gotten all the way to where mankind needs to get until the differences are essentially unrecognized and not, you know, so having a Gay Pride Month is necessary now because it's important to support people who might otherwise experience oppression. But pretty certainly in Holland, I'm confident they don't have this kind of need to have recognition because the society there is just very accepting and very tolerant. So you don't need to do it, you know. And we don't need to have we have St. Patrick's Day, but we aren't worried about the Irish being oppressed anymore. They used to be. So, I mean, we won't have gotten to where we need to get until these differences are just not even the subject of conversation.
I think it's well said, Sandy. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Hey, good morning, Tom.
Okay, first off, Earl, if people are so bored with their lives, if they're so worried about who it is that someone's intimate with, get a life. Get a life. Seriously. We're talking about, you know, myself as a gay man. I care more about my straight counterparts and their $60,000 job, and they're paying $64,000 for child care, mortgage, taxes, and medical care than I do care about my orientation. Now, I will tell you one thing. The reason why Gay Pride came about was in the 1970s with Stonewall. It was finally a time where the gay community could finally say, you know what, we're not taking this anymore. We're not getting arrested and put in the back of the paddy wagons and put in jail just because of who it is that we sleep with or who it is that we have our intimate life with. This is so ridiculous. And I just have to say, I'm okay with the fact of people boycotting products. But what kills me is they think the government's doing something about it. All the government's doing is protecting so people are equal. Wow, we have equality for marriage. That's what the government's done. It's the television shows. It's all the corporate or private corporations that have actually, furthered our visibility, which is hurrah for them. But if you don't want to watch the show, turn it off, just like you tell us about different things. If you don't like something, turn it off. And I will say one other thing. I have owned a small business for the past 18 years, which is called gayandlesbianpages.com or glpages.com. It is a directory for businesses who support the LGBTQ+ community. So therefore, people can actually do business with people they want to. And we've been very successful over 18 years. I'm really, really happy. NASCAR actually came out and said happy pride in a major way in their advertising. But do you really think that these people would be doing advertising to the LGBTQ+ community or supporters of the LGBTQ+ community if they didn't see there was some type of monetary gain in it?
Let me say this, Tom, because that, you know, there's an argument and a debate that says you guys are such a small minority in the country. I'm just saying, this is what I've been reading and hearing, and yet you are forcing, you know, your way of life on all these people in this country, and you're such a small minority of people. Why are you allowed to force this on everybody? This is what I'm hearing, and why this pushback.
You know why people think this? Because for the most part, racism, sexual orientation, all of these different things are interwoven into the fabric of our society. And the problem with it is that with the gay community, well, it could be a problem, it could be a plus or minus. But the gay community is pretty much invisible to the masses.
Yeah, it is.
Black people have their skin color. Women have their sexual identity that basically makes it where people know if they're a woman or if they're black. Hey. The gay community really doesn't have a whole lot.
Tom, we got to leave it there. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Steve from Green Bay. Good morning to you, Steve. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning to both of you. It's been a while since I've called in, so yes. It's nice to be back in your listening audience. But this is what I have to say. I know the calendar says we live in 2023, but it feels like when I watch the news, we live more like in 1923. It's no black, no gays, no pretty much no anything other than your straight white Christian people are accepted anymore. And I personally don't get it, you know. It's not affecting you, who people decide to love and be with, just like it's really not affecting you, the color, that someone was born. And I think there is much more productive things in this world that we could be doing than worrying about things that really don't affect us, A, and B, that we really can't control. So that's just my thought on it.
Listen, man, there's no question what you said is factual. It is the best way to look at all of these things. And as Sandy, said, we've just got to come to a point in the country where it doesn't affect you. All right. None of those things affect me. Right. It doesn't. I mean, living our own lives, Sandy, is difficult enough. Dealing with our own family issues, those things are difficult enough that I don't have time, nor am I concerned at all about what anybody's doing as far as those kinds of things are concerned. They're not harming anybody. That's their choice in this country. You have a right to that. And let's just leave it at that, Sandy.
I mean, my sense is that it's twofold. There's this great substitution theory, and it turns out that almost every one of the groups that get attacked for either the color of their skin or their conduct tend to be groups that are liberal in their voting orientation.
That's true.
And so that's sort of an interesting coincidence, at least. And I don't think it's a coincidence. And then secondarily, I think it has to do with the anger and fear of the what was the American establishment, the white male establishment that ran America for 200 plus years, and the fact that they're feeling this slip out of their fingers, the control. It's not that it's going to damage them other than putting them into a position of less control. And that fear has them essentially kicking the dog. They're reacting now more than they did in the past with respect to these groups that they feel are going to be supplanting them. The great substitution theory relies upon the fact that all of these various minority groups that are identified vote as a bloc and will vote against the interest of this old white establishment, which isn't necessarily the case, but it's an assumption that's made.
I think it's the
thread that runs through all of this.
Sandy, there's no question that you're kind of right on point with that. Let's go to Julie from Franklin. Hey, good morning, Julie. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
I'm fine. You guys don't even ask who it is anymore. I call so much.
No, it's fine. I enjoy your calls.
Okay, so I don't think white male Americans are mad about gay people or other things. I think they're like I've got a dad and a husband and a brother and cousins, and they're proud Americans, and they, you know, I don't know why everybody's beating up on white guys or white people in general. There's a handful of people that you're talking about. Most people, like in your daily life, Earl, do you see hatred and white and black and brown people not getting along?
Well, yeah. It exists. And as a black man now who's lived to soon be 69 years, I've got a viewpoint based on my 69 years of living that there certainly this is a point in time where the things are moving in a different direction, not a positive direction, as it relates to people willing to work together and get along. I think we're at a point, and I think Sandy has pointed it out well, that there are people who believe that there's this replacement theory that is going to happen, because when white people have zero population growth, there's no question that, which is what they have, that would every time a white person dies, there's not another white person to replace them in this country, that eventually those things are going to happen. You don't think that there are people who are fearful of that, Julie?
I think you're always going to have ignorant, fearful people, close-minded in any race. And I guess what I find interesting is that we're singling out whites. That's racist. Like, nobody, I don't think anyone really understands the term racist. And the other thing I think is interesting is the other caller said, this is worse than 100 years ago. Oh, it absolutely is not worse than 100 years ago. There's people accept gay people, accept all colors. We had a black president, and white people voted for the black president.
So Julie, so when you say, white people are proud to be Americans, there's all sorts of other Americans aren't defined by the color of their skin. And so everybody who's an American is not white. So when people hear this term that white people are proud to be Americans, you know, everybody who's in the country is proud to be an American. And when it's prefaced by saying white people are proud to be Americans, you know, that's kind of what leads to the kind of things that we're talking about.
He was talking about white men. White men are the ones that are, ganging up on whatever they don't.
Historically, white men have been in control of the nation. They still are. And so when to be honest with you, when I hear white men feeling like they're being threatened as a black man, that's kind of, comical to me, because white men have been in positions of power in this nation since its beginning, and others have had to take a back seat to that. And so when I to hear that the white men are threatened, that's a difficult thing for me as an African American to accept.
Okay, and I totally understand that. I don't know what it's like to be you. I also know, though, that we got to keep moving forward. We keep going over. If you look back in time, we keep going over and over and over this issue. And we're not fixing it.
Well, let me do this.
We have to come together.
So let me do this. So Sandy's a white man. Sandy, you...
Well, yeah, let me say, you can't generalize... And everyone doesn't fit the generalization. But what we have tried to do is examine political movements in the country, all right? There's the Trump political movement. I think everyone would agree that people supporting Donald Trump have constituted a movement. That movement has, when you look at it demographically, is basically white people dominated by white men in terms of the voting, so the demographics. We have these issues that have come to the fore now that have, where there has been a great deal of back and forth about, for instance, transsexualism, or in North Carolina, what bathrooms people can use. A whole bunch of things that have surfaced that have agitated various people in the political framework. And so you try to understand who it is that's being agitated and why. And so that's really what the conversation is about. I think, Julie, you're the person actually who called in a couple of days ago and mentioned the fact that you were concerned because we were at the point now where 57% of Americans weren't paying income taxes. And however, that represented to you a problem of essentially, I didn't know what exactly, couch potatoism. People were avoiding taxes. But the reason 57% of the people aren't paying taxes is very alarming. And the reason is they aren't earning enough money to require that they pay income taxes, because the median income in America is $74,000 for a family, $43,000 for an individual. If you look at that individual income, and if you look at the standard deductions and the rest of it, $43,000 really isn't enough to afford to be able to pay taxes, and nor does the tax system require that they pay it. But it's not a demonstration that these people are freeloading. It's a demonstration that we have too many people not earning enough money in America.
And if you look at studies, when they do earn enough and have to pay taxes, it creates I don't know what you call it, but why should I work more and have to give the government a percentage of what I'm doing when I can work part-time and not have to do that? You see, I'm not saying everybody does that, but it does create that. And the other, like when I called in the other day, it was about the 50 to 52-year-olds. Okay, I don't know about you guys, but everybody in my family worked until they're 65. I'm still working. My husband's still working. 50 is not that old to work 20 hours a week. Is it?
I don't understand the whole, I don't understand the food stamp program. I don't understand who it's named at. Is it aimed at the working poor? Because that's the way it's now established, because you have to work half-time in order to qualify for it. So if you're one of the now, I think today's announcement was we have 6.1 million unemployed people in America. So those people are not working part-time. They're unemployed. How are they going to eat? And do we supply them with food support? I don't know. But so I don't understand the program enough to talk about it sensibly. But I do understand the problem we have with taxes. And you're right. When you earn enough money to pay taxes, it does cement you to the country in a greater fashion than if you don't. But these people who are not earning enough to not pay any taxes aren't doing it because they live better that way. No. Some of them might do it because they're at the margin of getting Medicaid, and if they earn just a little more, they'll lose their medical insurance and they can't afford $16,000 a year for the medical insurance it will cost them.
So, Sandy,
because our medical insurance program is so broken.
So, Sandy, I want you to repeat that again, because I think people miss that part of it.
Well, the people who don't earn enough money today to pay taxes are not living better as a result of that. These people are struggling. And there are some people, because our healthcare system is so broken, who are reluctant to take, for instance, a 20-hour-a-week job or some level of work that would disqualify them from Medicaid, because the cost of losing Medicaid in this country is the cost of private health insurance. And the bronze coverage under private health insurance costs about $16,000 or more a year before you get $1 of insurance coverage. So our system is broken. But it's hard to blame the people for the broken system.
So hang on. Hang on, Julie, Tom, Sandy. We'll be right back. Texas, that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, the reason I keep Julie on, you know, is because Julie represents so many American people that we don't get to hear from, right? And she does a great job of explaining, you know, the other side of this equation. And so, And so that's why I think it's good to have her on. Sandy, you say what?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think the point she makes about singling out white males and that it's racist, you know, I know that there are, that the situation has changed and the shoe is on the other foot, so to speak. But and it probably is in a way, you know, affirmative action does feel like sort of a reverse racism. But it's really about the effect of losing control. Whites have been in control of the economy, and now they're maybe potentially losing dominance or control. But that doesn't mean they're falling out of the economy. They're just falling in with everyone else. You know, they're getting measured along with everyone else, and they're being talked about in conjunction with everyone else. And so I think that probably is unsettling.
So the other part of it, Sandy, is it's a global economy now. You know, there was a time when, you know, as you've always stated, our nation was, you know, clearly in charge, in control of all things, you know, in this globally. And other people have caught up.
Absolutely. And that's really a part of it, too. America is in the throes of the very same kind of a loss of dominance and control. And I think it's causing us to be reactive and to try and assert dominance across the world when it's a lost cause. You know, the idea that we can have Pax Americana, as we thought in the 90s, and that we can dominate the world is evolving into a circumstance where that won't happen. And America is evolving in that same way, and it's threatening. You know, evolution is always threatening to the people who are involved within the evolution, who are seeing their situation changed.
So Julie, Tom is back. Tom, quickly, you want to say to Julie?
Hey, Julie, I would actually, yeah, Julie, I'd just like to say, first off, thanks for calling. Second is, I really would recommend her look up on either YouTube or online, Jane Elliott, JaneElliott, and just, research some of that stuff. Because I know, like, people like you or me, we probably grew up with a real strong family background, and, you're probably from a smaller town. A lot of times we think that we grew it all on our own. But honestly, we're kind of part of the lucky sperm club in some ways, even at a lower rate. But I'd like to know is, Julie, why are you not also as incensed with the billionaire class not paying their fair share of taxes? Because we have people that are like Jeff Bezos that actually gets money back from the government for not paying taxes. But I do understand your point of view. I'm here in Durand, Wisconsin right now. I see a lot of your point of view, but I really recommend you take a look at Jane Elliott. She was a school teacher, and she really kind of points out where it is that you and I have some white privilege that we probably need to check at the door.
Thank you, Tom. Julie?
I absolutely check her out. But I did not, if you listen to my whole segment when I was on, I did say the billionaires need to be paying more. At the black, white, brown, orange, all of them, Democrat, Republican, I did say that. The middle class and lower middle class is slowly going away, and we're the ones that are footing the bill for everything. I don't know if this is in the same, I'm not very articulate.
You do a great job.
I'm trying. I'm, and the older I get, then I forget stuff. But anyway, I just think that there's a lot of gray area, and there's this, like, to me. I don't know,
Julie. There's a lot of fear, and Sandy talks about that a lot. And as you stated very clearly, that many whites, middle-class whites, are fearful of what is happening to them. But I think where people make mistakes is everybody's fearful of what's happening to them. It's not just whites. Poor people are fearful of what's happening to them on a daily basis. They don't know where they're going to be. They don't know whether they're going to have a roof over their heads. They don't know whether they're going to have food. They live in areas that are unsafe. Fear is that unknown factor that is driving people into separations, I think, too much of amongst ourselves. Sandy, you want to say?
Well, yeah, I think middle America, this median family, lives in financial peril. You can do it just by working out their budget and seeing how it is they live and what they face. And middle America is comprised of many colors, right?
Yes.
And the color of middle America is changing over time. And the situation of the median family in America has actually deteriorated based on the loss of healthcare benefits at work as a primary factor. And the loss of pensions through work is another major factor. And I think the question of who's footing the bill is much more complicated. It isn't white America that's footing the bill, as Julie, I think people tend to think that it's white middle-class America that's footing the bill. And the fact is that the billionaire class might not be that numerous, 700-800 people, whatever it is,
right,
in America. But the amount of taxes they would pay, it would be very considerable if they paid the average amount of tax paid by Tom, Dick, and Mary, who make enough to pay taxes, let's say the $140,000 income earner, family income earner. So I think, Julie, what you bring to the table is very important.
Yes.
Because I think you have a very reasoned view of exactly what is troubling and what is separating America. So I appreciate it.
Hey, Sandy, thank you, man, for trooping on through it. I really appreciate it. You and I will be in touch later. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. I'll be back on Monday. You've been tuned into the Early Morning Show.
I'll be back. Bye.
See you later.